Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, April 1st, 2024. Happy belated April Fools and Easter to everyone who celebrates either or both of those. Happy birthday to Fred and George Weasley. The Rapids beat LAFC over the weekend. Georgi Mihailovic got a brace, broke his duck. Super excited about that. And speaking of birthdays, Moise Mumbito scored on his birthday as well, and with his mama in attendance. Things are looking a bit brighter today in Commerce City, Colorado. Joining me now from the Benny Fellhaber Media Room on board the Jewish space laser orbiting planet Earth, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
We are in seventh place, Matt. We are far above Seattle, who are dead last in 14th. That is an amazing thing to say. I don't think we'll be saying it for very long, but I do think it is just a, you know, if you told me the Colorado Rapids would be above, I think they're also above LAFC. I think LAFC is in ninth right now. We would be above LAFC and above Seattle in the table 6 weeks into the season. I would have told you you were smoking something. And then asked where you got it. So good times, Matt. Yeah. Matt's wearing a resplendent bright pink Fulham kit. I'm assuming it's their third kit from like last year. Their second kit from
this year.
This year. And yes. Then a very bright and colorful paradise hat. Matt is flexing. He is absolutely if he went out to the tailgate like this. He'd have to have two bodyguards to fend off all the ladies who were coming for him because he's got so much swag playing right now. Whereas I'm just wearing a lame-ass cardigan and a baseball cap in my basement. And this is what happens with 47-year-old men. We're not trying to impress anybody with how we dress. We're just trying to get through the day, which is why I'm also drinking whiskey. Stranahan's, our favorite whiskey that doesn't sponsor us. We're going to keep promoting them even because we like them. Even though they have not sent us a bottle yet, we're waiting. My address can be found at the end of this podcast. Back to you, Matt.
Well said, Mark. So I think it's worth pointing out, Mark, as you know, the Colorado Rapids will be playing Inter-Miami on Saturday. I went to the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida for my undergraduate degree, Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Engineering. And so I've got a fair bit of drip from my time in Florida, Mark. And so I certainly have to... I've got to show it out. So it will be bright colors, not necessarily the pink of the Fulham secondary kit, which I'm wearing at the moment, does not fit in my color wheel as a ginger, but certainly the bright greens, the bright blues, certainly the University of Miami color orange absolutely work with my color wheel as well. And so, Mark, I don't know if we mentioned this. I will be doing, I think this is my first time in the history of this podcast, I'm officially doing a HTHL away day. Normally, it's been you driving out to the various places in the Midwest when the Rapids are out that way, or it has been when you've gone back to the motherland in Southern California to see LAFC or to see, I don't know, you haven't been to a Galaxy game against the Rapids, have you, Mark?
But I am. It won't be against the Rapids, but I'll be in LA in the beginning of June, and they're at home, and I'm definitely going to that game. And I have no good reason, though, to get a press pass, so it'll just be me eating nachos with the kids in the stands. So
okay, well, Galaxy tickets are still relatively, assuming it's not LAFC, Mark, and I assume that it's not, you'll be okay to get tickets. Obviously, Inter-Miami tickets a little bit harder to get. So I've been looking at this fixture for a number of years now, listeners. You know, this is the fifth season that Inter-Miami has existed, and this will be the first time that the Colorado Rapids actually play Inter-Miami. So I was circling this, you know, when David Beckham announced in like 2015 that Miami was getting an MLS team, I was already thinking about coming to one of these games. So it was, ironically, Marcus, we'll get to in a bit, probably will not be seeing in Lionel Messi in the flesh this weekend. But so this is a fixture that I've been looking at and been thinking about. And Mark, by the time that we have a kickoff on Saturday night, I will officially be a godfather as well. My
amazing
3-year-old Thomas will be getting baptized in the morning. And so we were looking at it. They wanted to do it around his birthday. His birthday's in March. And so Nick and Bianca were looking at it and saying like, hey, Matt, like, you know, can we make this work and everything? And I'm like, can we wait until the MLS schedule comes out and everything? And it's like, that's kind of extra, and you're using this as an excuse to just go to a soccer game without us, but sure, fine.
Amen.
And as soon as I saw that the Rapids were there the first Saturday in April, I said, you know, like, book it, make sure that, you know, that your religious person is available as well, and then so we're making it work. So going officially, Mark, on paper to go become the godfather of Thomas, who is a wonderful, who is a shining light in a world full of darkness for me, not unlike Yangel, and also going to see the Rapids play Inter-Miami. But so I don't know if we mentioned this in a while, Mark, since we've never been a video podcast. But so listeners who are new to the show will know that Mark will wear whatever, but sometimes we are dressed thematically with who the Rapids are playing or what's going on in the season or what have you. I have busted out many a skiing ugly Christmas sweaters when it's been towards the end of the year or the start of the new calendar year. So I always try to have some theme in what I'm wearing. And so bringing out the bright colors, the snapback and everything, Mark, I could be walking down, I could be walking down South Beach right now in what I'm wearing and would absolutely fit in a place where I spent a formative parts of my years. Mark, let's get into our banter topic formally. We had an absolutely legendary Ask HTHL email from one Ian. So, Ian, I want to thank you for this email. And Mark, he's asking about the atmosphere at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. I should point out, listeners, Ian emailed us prior to the Rapids game against LAFC, which I thought had a good atmosphere for a day drunk crowd out there at the Richard. But so he's got this question. I'm going to read it now, Mark, in abbreviated form, and then we are going to talk about it. Hi, Rabbi in Red. My name is Ian, and I'm a huge fan of both the Rapids and Holding the High Line. Really enjoy listening to your podcast and on my way to college and back. Ian, hope stuff's going well with school and everything. Hope you're studying hard. If for some reason you are going into engineering or rabbinical studies, hit us up. I have a bit of a long-winded question for you. Recently, I saw a comment on a YouTube video about the lack of energy and atmosphere at Rapids games. That made me start to think about how C38 and our stadium compared to other teams, and it's made me realize that we're behind other teams in terms of stadium atmosphere. LAFC is a great example of this. Their stadium is rocking every game. My personal opinion is that a single supporters group system is actually hurting the development of the fan culture. I love C38, and I love the community of people it brings, and I'm even a season ticket member in 117, but other teams have multiple groups, and I think that there is a need for a new mix of groups or ideas if Rapids fan culture is going to take it up a notch. Yada, yada, yada. What do you think needs to happen to make sure that the Rapids Stadium is a bucket list destination for Rapids fans and make people want to be Rapids fans, regardless of how the team does? And then, Mark, what are your thoughts on this from an atmosphere standpoint? And I know you're more in tune with the lore of C38's origins and how it came together, but I have some notes on that as well that I'll touch on after you answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been around longer. That's all. Like, the only thing I contribute to this podcast is being older and having been around the Colorado Rapids a couple of years before Matt. But so C38 famously, and any of our C38 listeners who've been around longer than me, if there are any, can chime in and correct me. are an amalgamation, a conglomeration, a combination, yea, verily, of multiple supporters groups. There used to be several Colorado Rapids supporters groups, PID Army, Class 5, and a couple others, Mile High Locos included. And at some point, all these fairly small supporters groups were kind of combined into one supporters group. And then there was a period at which there were two locations for our supporters groups. Section 101, which was directly behind one goal, and Section 117, which is directly behind the opposite goal. And eventually, they decided to close 101 because it was a terrible... it didn't contain sound well, because that end of the stadium wasn't built to contain sound. It's open-ended. So they eventually moved the supporters section to 117. The other thing was they combined all the supporters into one supporters group who were renamed Centennial 38. Shortly thereafter, there was a breakaway. This is not well publicized or well remembered, but some of our listeners might remember this. In fact, some of our listeners may have been part of the breakaway. There was something called the Bulldog Supporters Group, which decided that they didn't really want to be with C38. Colorado Rapids didn't really want to help them create an alternate supporters group section and weren't particularly supportive of that. It's very complicated, and this is, by the way, there's a wonderful book by John Montague called. It's not 3252. I forget what it's called. It's 1312 is what it's called. It's the number version of ACAB, which is it's all about supporters groups worldwide. And one of the things that's really common with supporters groups worldwide is that on some level they're given their own authority to buy and sell tickets, and or they're given kind of their own allotment from the front office for them to sell. That's really what's kind of been the most powerful thing for C38, which is they get their own section, they sell their tickets directly. The best deal in the stadium, if you're trying to get a cheap ticket to a Rapids game or cheap season tickets, is to become part of the supporters group. And I think it's a great way of going. So that's just one kind of preamble thing about the history. Second thing that I'll say of like to Ian's comment, which I think Ian's got a really good point. The second point I'll make is this. MLS 1.0 teams, aka the founding fathers, the granddaddies of them all, the OGs, all have a hard time in MLS with both their supporters group and their overall atmosphere and culture, right? The Galaxy are still kind of rebounding after, and they won 5 championships and were absolutely dominant up till 2013. But they're still kind of putting it back together in the modern era. San Jose, who are a fairly early team, DC United have a fairly strong supporters group, but they definitely, they have something else going for them, which is a brand new stadium. The Revs are an OG 1.0 team. They have a solid supporters group, but an overall struggling kind of supporters atmosphere, which goes to their stadium, et cetera, et cetera. Red Bull are really struggling. The biggest complaint you'll ever see on Red Bull Twitter is that nobody ever goes to the games. They never sell out, right? Like, and their biggest problem is they're in the wrong place. They're across the river. They're actually in New Jersey. So it's really complicated, but the broad stroke that I could make is MLS 1.0 teams with old stadiums really struggle to draw fans, and they really struggle to draw supporters. By comparison, the 2.0 and the 3.0 teams, LAFC, NYFC, Seattle Sounders, Portland Timbers, they build their stadium with their supporters in mind. Their supporters groups are kind of like groundbreaking, kind of beginning the process of building the atmosphere and the stadium. They put all the energy into the supporters groups. They let the supporters groups have a huge swath of territory. The 3252 have this massive section, and they start with a massive culture that they have not had to maintain for 27 years, like the Colorado Rapids. Remember, the Rapids had to maintain a supporters culture when they used to play in Mile High Stadium, which seats 100,000, right? And the Rapids weren't drawing any more than like they were drawing 25,000 or 20,000 for the July 4th game. But that's about it. Like, it's really hard to maintain and elevate an atmosphere. So anyhow, those are a couple of my notes about why it's hard. Ian had one more comment, and then Matt's going to say something. Ian had one more comment about, like, would starting another supporters group kind of help this? I don't think so, but I do think I'm a old man at this point in my life, and I'm mostly a believer in slow but steady wins the race at this point, which is the Rapids need 5 years of winning soccer. They need some modest DSGP stadium renovations, which might include a nicer, bigger supporters section with some cool amenities and a little bit of energy kind of put into that section. But slow and steady wins the race, meaning growing C38 slowly might be a good way to kind of do things. It's going to take some winning, it's going to take some stadium investment, and it's going to take C38 finding ways of opening itself up to a new brand of fans to kind of get there. Matt, your thoughts and comments on the supporter section, growing the team, energy in the stadium, all those things.
First, a fact check, neither iteration of Mile High Stadium have ever seated 100,000 people. Old Mile High capped out at about 76, and then we're barely over 70. It's the open end zone component, Mark. If it was if you completed the horseshoe on the south side, I think it probably would have been 100,000.
I know. I grew up in Los Angeles, where, and Matt did too, where the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum seat 100,000. So my default position is football stadium seat 100,000, but I'm from a big, big city. Not like Denver. Ouch! Okay. Zing!
In any case, your point, Mark, like, it could have been 100,000, it could have been a 50,000. So, you know, the Rapids were getting, I don't know what their attendance was in, like, the late 90s, early aughts off the top of my head, but it was not what Seattle and what Charlotte and what Atlanta getting are right now playing in their NFL stadium, which speaks to your point about newer markets and more chic markets with new ownership that have the momentum of MLS without having to create it from the ground up and having to maintain it. So to your point, Mark, piggybacking off of the history of supporters groups and everything, no front office wants to deal with multiple supporters groups from an organization and a who gets what sections and just the geopolitics of that. It's an absolute nightmare. And where there are clubs that have larger supporters bases, for the most part, it's still one single organization with leadership that negotiates back and forth, or it's a coming together of a collective. So you point out LAFC, for example. The Rapids just played LAFC. There's a bunch of individual supporters groups that have one or two sections within that section of the stadium that is the 3252. And then those supporters groups have their own leadership, which together are the, I don't know, I'm not sure what their terminology is, but the leadership, the supporters leadership council, which then interacts directly with the front office, the club, tickets and sales. We want to do TIFO on this day. We want be able to sell merch. Here's what we want from a food standpoint. And so, to your point, Mark, there's never been, and to be clear, Rabbi and I have never been members of C38. We get along with C38. We're not going to pretend to speak for them. They have their own podcast for that. Talk to Dave Wagner if you want to hear about this. It is not clear to me that pre-C38, there was any sense of organization or getting along well together amongst the supporters group, let alone individually negotiating with the club. And at the same time, it's not clear to me that there's enough of a breakaway group right now, if one even exists. Are we counting the Locos as not C38 at this point, Mark? That's a fun question that I don't know the answer to, of a group that would be big enough that could not rival C38, but be similar in size to then have their own relationship with the front office. And so, and you combine that with the state of the stadium, with where you're going to sit and everything. Now, the benefit to having multiple supporters groups that from an interaction relationship standpoint are separate is that they can get their own little things, which then can help out the atmosphere. So let's go to the other side of Los Angeles, Mark, LA Galaxy, where they've got three different supporters groups and they sit in three different sections for the most part. There's been issues with this, like you saw where one of the supporters groups buckled on the Chris Klein protests from last year. And so they came back into the stadium. And so then there was a rift between them. But there's a nice benefit of each of those supporters groups has their own area in the stadium. They can do chants back and forth to each other. They can do chants with the other sections of the stadium that they're in as well, which can help each other. So you spread out the power rather than say, for Portland, for example, where it's just the Timbers army behind one goal, one end zone, and there's 7,000, and you're either in the army interacting as a part of the army, or it's the army doing a call and response with the rest of the supporters, with the rest of the supporters in the entire stadium. We see this at times with C38, where they do the Colorado Rapids, but it's a bit disjointed. And so could you get another supporters group that could take a corner of the South Stand? They could do some stuff amongst each other. They could do some stuff with C38. They could do some stuff South Stand versus East and West Stand, I think is an interesting question as well. Fundamentally, Mark, the team's going to have to win. There's going to have to be a bunch of hardcore supporters who are going to be there every single week, no matter how bad the team is, no matter how bad the weather is, in order to help with that atmosphere. And it's hard to do that with the way that the front office is, the way that ownership is, with the way the team is, and where the stadium is at. Speaking of the stadium, Mark, as the engineer person who works with architects, the Rapids might have the worst stadium in terms of atmosphere and acoustics in all of Major League Soccer. Because fundamentally, unlike newer stadiums, we don't have a lot of roofs. And so the noisiest part of the stadium, the section that is the loudest and is making the most noise throughout it, is the one section that doesn't have a roof. The noise goes everywhere. It goes immediately up and out. And then Mark commented, yeah, you're right, FC Dallas and Houston have similar setups as well. So the so that does not help. So acoustically, in terms of the how much noise is being made by the fans and then how much is actually being retained or making it onto the pitch, it's one of the worst that you have in MLS. You need more fans. You need more butts in seats. You need those fans to be louder, and you would need a big of enough crowd to where then maybe we do something besides have the northern boundary on the north side to then have more fans to then make more noise. And you need some form of massive renovation that would change the geometry and the acoustics of the ground in order to then retain that noise a little bit better. In terms of what you can do individually, Ian, you have your season tickets, you can be louder, you can get more involved with C38 to create more chance as well, you can get people to make more noise, you can get friends to come in and have group tickets and maybe see if they want to become season ticket members. But there's a, to this point, Mark, this isn't a us bashing C38 situation, but there's a lot of stuff that's going on to this that is outside of any individual supporter.
Everybody on this podcast knows that you and I are huge supporters of C38. I've sat with them. I prefer to actually at least spend one half of a soccer match as a reporter with C38 because it's a really great, unique experience. The tailgate is fantastic. The folks who run the organization are great. I have nothing but love for C38 because of how hard they have to work to do what they do. They've been fighting an uphill battle for a very long time, and they do a great thing. I also think, like, we're a smaller soccer club, and we have to be okay with that. Like, we don't sell 40,000, 47,000 tickets a game like Seattle does, or like Atlanta does with 60,000 fans in Mercedes-Benz every week. We just can't be judged on the same scale. But, you know, if you go and sit in 1-17, it's a great experience. I highly recommend it for everybody.
It is worth noting, Mark, that starting last year, C38 did increase their sphere of influence. They took over one other section, which also had safe standing as well. So, I mean, could they grow to the point, Mark, to where they have five sections or potentially the whole, that entire South Stand, you know, that, you know, is as rowdy and doing in the same size and volume as the Timbers Army? And if the team was good enough to where then fans got retained and instead of getting 14,000 people on an afternoon game, you knew for a fact that it was going to be a sellout. But, you know, I agree with you to your point, you know, pound for pound, there's C38 sickos that are as great as what you have in Portland and Seattle and Austin. And I would say even now the Ohio teams, just the issue is there's a few hundred of them and there's maybe 100,000 people at most who care mostly about the Rapids. And we get about 15,000 to 16,000 people a game. And there are other MLS fan bases where their sicko supporter hardcore group is in the thousands and they get tens of thousands of people instead of like 15. And so there's only so much that we can do about that. If anybody at the club is looking for someone who has some structural experience who would like to make some recommendations for how we can acoustically, you know, get another mountain tiered style stand on the South Stands to then help some of that C38 noise and drums to be included as well, I'd be happy to make a reference to anybody who wants to hear it. Okay, Mark, let's launch off this plane here for the win this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Listeners, the Colorado Rapids played Los Angeles Football Club, and it's almost your tradition at this point, Mark, with Holding the High Line, where we do a preview pod about LAFC. They're coming into DSG, they're riding high, they just got a big win, the Rapids are looking disappointed, and it looks like just a scheduled loss for the Colorado Rapids, and LAFC comes in, they're a little bit lethargic, their best player, previously Carlos Vela, now Dennis Bouanga, has somewhat of a quiet night. The Rapids are able to contain him, and then somebody stands up in a critical moment and makes a critical play to get the result. And those were Moise Bombito and Georgi Mihailovic, and they were able to get the job done. I won't do a full rundown of this game, folks. There were long stretches where it was just absolutely helter-skelter and lots of chances for both teams. I do think LAFC was the better team in the first half for me, Mark. But so I'll just run through the goals right now. Edward Atuesta scores off of a broken down play in a corner on the top of the box. That was in the 8th minute. Kevin Cabral did start this game, Mark, and I thought was decent by his standards, but he got a little aggressive on the marking there, and then kind of he rushed to get to Atuesta and then left space for Atuesta then do the Ronaldo chop inside and then smash the ball past Zach Steffen. So a disappointing start for the Colorado Rapids. And then you had Moise Bombito score on the corner in the 38th minute at the near side post. Georgi Mihailovic getting his first goal contribution of the day. And for the Rapids, you have the substitute, David Martinez, who had a wild game in this one, Mark. He subs on, he scores on a great run into the middle. Keegan Rosenberry and Andreas Maxu in those positions, Mark. And again, it was Sam Vines' side of the field, but Andreas Maxu a little bit out of position in that play. We'll talk about his mask in a minute. But so LAFC goes up, and then you had a brace from Georgi Mihailovic in the in the 83rd and then the 89th minute, scoring on a set piece that was won by, I think it was Ollie Larazmark. It might have been Cole Bassett just outside the box, but Georgi, absolutely one of the best set pieces I've seen on that side of the field at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in recent memory, Mark. And then Rafael Navajo off a throw-in lumps the ball into the box, and it's the substitute Kamani Stewart-Baines who knocks it down with a header, and then Georgi plays it off of his knee and in, and the Rapids get out of dodge and they get the result, Mark. Should be said, that was with Kai Kamara subbing on for LAFC in the, what minute did Kai come on? In the 78th minute. So I was joking. I made my rounds, Mark. I should say, Rabbi, we had a few club employees who came up who've been very complimentary of the podcast, but a number of them who said that they particularly liked this past week's episode. So we're liked in the building. We're liked at the tailgate. I'm down with that. But so I was the negative Nelly in the press box and at the tailgate beforehand, Mark. And so I was just saying, like, on paper, this should be a comfortable AFC win. But then somebody would always respond with the, well, but remember when that's happened in the past, and it's been Danny Wilson scoring in that lightning storm. It was decision day, which we were very pessimistic about, and we didn't think that the Rapids were going to win the game. We didn't think that the Rapids were going to be able to have the results go their way with Sporting and with Seattle to then win the Western Conference. And they blow out LAFC 5-2. They play absolutely fantastically. And so, there's kind of that narrative now. I think that there's some lore to be had in this moment with that game, Mark. And so that was kind of the rebuttal, the thought I had. But still in the back of my mind, just from all the PTSD of covering this team, I'm like, it's going to be 1-1. It's going to be a tight game. And of all people, Kai Kamara is going to sub on in the 85th minute and score on a set piece in the final game, in the final kick of the game.
We're going to get Alan Gordon-ed by our own Alan Gordon throwback, Kai Kamara himself.
And he's going to celebrate, and he's going to celebrate in front of C38 and everything, and he's going to tweet something about Porik Smith trading him and about how he never should have left the Colorado Rapids.
Heart hands in our face, right?
Yes. Yeah, heart hands and then maybe some fingers. Kai's classy about his celebrations for the most part.
He's a good dude.
Statement. But so, Mark, this game had so much in it. I'll throw to you, and let's start with good things. Let's start with good things.
There were a lot of good things. I mean, I've been like sitting back for weeks and saying to myself, like, Georgi Mihailovic is not earning his salary. It's really frustrating. Why is he not kind of showing up? And he really showed up here. And the moment that he really showed up was that free kick. Earlier in the game, Cole Bassett had a free kick from the left side outside the box, and he didn't hit it. Free kicks are hard. You need, you need enough chances, you need enough shots to generate the percentage that allows you to get a goal, right? Like, it takes, you know, we don't know anything about how well a player does on free kicks until they've taken 5, 10, 20 free kicks. But that being said, you know, we've had a couple of good free kick wizards for the Colorado Rapids the last couple of years. Skeljan Gashi was a free kick wizard. Jack Price was absolutely a free kick wizard. Kellen Acosta, really great with free kicks. But none of those guys plays for the team anymore. And so dead ball specialists were something that we really needed. Did we get one? It seems like we did, because Georgi Mihailovic stepped up and did a great job on his free kick, and it changed the game. I mean, absolutely, the energy in the building completely shifted at that moment, and the momentum, Big Mo, kind of swung in the Rapids direction. So that was a big thing. Another thing that I noticed in this match that I thought was really interesting was that in the past, I have been saying that the LaRaz to Bassett to Vines homegrown connection was going to be our calling card, and it was going to be like the thing that we needed. Those three guys were going to have a big season for us to be good. And one of the reasons I thought that was because I had kind of written off Georgi, and I had kind of said, like, Zach Steffen's not the guy who's necessarily going to get it done for us. And I'd kind of written off Kevin Cabral also. And all of those guys stepped up and had big games for us today, the other day. The last great thing that I'll say, it's not a good thing, it's a great thing, was Kamani Stewart-Baines with the winning assist. That was such a heads-up, no pun intended, slash pun intended, play. You know, the ball came across to his side of the field. He knew he didn't have the best play on it, but he saw a player who was square to goal, dead in front, 4 yards out, and he just headed the ball down to Mihailovic, and just that was that. It was a phenomenal kind of soccer awareness play, and also very selfless. I mean, just incredibly, like, I think a lot of striker forwards would say to themselves, like, oh, I'm in a great place to finish this one. And the fact that he flashed it across the face of goal to a wide open player, absolutely brilliant, above his kind of experience level and expectation. Like, to be a selfless forward is a really valuable thing, and I was just really, really impressed and really glad for that moment. So those are my good things. This team overwhelmingly at the end of the game, it was a lot of this was a surprise to me. One of the things I said going into the half was it's all going to be down to the second half, and I really thought that the Rapids tactically were going to struggle second half, especially based on how they started in this match. They started slow, they started careful, they started kind of ponderous, and they grew into the game, and then coming out of the half, they didn't slow down. They didn't suddenly turn into a pumpkin. They looked just as good or better in the second half as they did in the first. That is, by the way, pointing out that the opponent picked up a red card, and so you should capitalize on moments like that, and they did. Matt, yes. Your good things.
That red card did come in the 85th minute, listeners, so it was 2-2 at that point. I wouldn't say, Mark, that, you know, like, LAFC, they had numbers back and everything. It wasn't like LAFC got a red card, realized, okay, it's 2-2, let's play for the draw. They put a bunch of men behind the ball, and then the Rapids had to break down, you know, a low block in order to beat them. But so to your point, picking up on Kamani Stewart-Baines, KSB, Mark, he got asked in post-game media availability about that play, and he joking, you know, he smiled and he said, you know, I had so much time on the ball. Like, I had so much time to think about just taking it down and trying to get a shot, but out of the corner of my eye, I saw Georgi getting a little bit of separation. It's just like let me just put it in a position for him to do something with it as well. And so that showed for me, to your point, selflessness, but also an incredible level of maturity in that moment, to where the big thing that I noticed, Mark, with young soccer players or young athletes making the step up in any sport from college to professional, is that chances are they're good athletes. Chances are their body just needs maybe a little bit of time to adjust or get in the weight room in order to match that. But then it's their brain is used to a slower pace of play. And so where the difference is, or where your catch up is, at what point does your brain able to keep up and get on an MLS speed level compared to a college speed, and then your body is able to react to that. So the fact that he was seeing that, he was thinking it. Now, you know, he had plenty of time to sit there and think through his options consciously or subconsciously before instincts then had him do that. But the fact that in that moment he didn't flub it, you know, Mark, I don't know that does 2017 Sam Vines on loan with Charlotte Independence, does he handle that in the same way necessarily? I would say Rookie of the Year Andre Shinyashiki makes that play accurately. I think we can make an argument at times last year, different situation because he's a center back, where Moise Bombito, the rookie, does not, his brain freaks out in that moment and then his body kind of flusters with it and he doesn't handle that situation. So to your point, like, we are on, KSB is my guy at this
I thought he had a phenomenal game, and he was really, like, he was low-key the star of the game for that play, but high-key or top-key or whatever the opposite of low-key is, the star of the game was obviously Mihailović.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Georgi Mihailović, Mark, finally, you know, I think you saw with the audio that we played last podcast about the demeanor that he had post game of what he was feeling emotionally and the pressure. And okay, that didn't lead to him creating chances for other people. But Mark, do we care, Mark, if the Rapids have a number 10 DP and a DP number 9, do we care who's scoring and who's assisting, or is it just creating goals at this point? Like, at some point, just have somebody who in that critical moment, you know, this game had 10 or 15 critical moments from an attacking standpoint. Oliveira trying to shoot on the outside of the post and Stefan collecting the ball. Dennis Bowanga with that chip early on in the first half that Stefan has to look into the sun to find, and it goes off the crossbar and is almost headed in as well. LAFC had moments to try and win this, and their star players who normally do that were unable to do that. And the Rapids had two or three really big opportunities, and we've seen normally the Rapids absolutely flub it. Yapi doesn't get his shot off. Kevin Cabral fumbles the ball away and it gets collected by a defender. Rafael Navajo has his shot blocked or whatever. Cole Bassett has his off target. Jonathan Lewis skies it into, you know, into row 20. And Georgi Mihailović had two big opportunities with the set piece and then a really difficult touch on with that knee for that goal in the 89th, and he buried both of them. And to do that with the level of confidence and conviction, and to then have the joy and the relief come after that, given the way that he played and given the result against Houston, is a massive step forward. Are there still underlying concerns? Absolutely, Mark. These were two goals off of set pieces, one corner, one direct free kick. The Rapids still did not play, did not create a whole lot from the run of play. And the goal that they got from the run of play was Navajo just hopefully lumping it into the box when LAFC already had a man sent off. There are still underlying questions for this, but at the end of the day, the Rapids needed a win. And if that could have been coupled with one of their players who's been underperforming, rising above their previous issues to just get that confidence, then maybe fake it until they make it. This is exactly what the doctor ordered. And to get that, to then have people go enjoy their Easter a little bit early, as opposed to, you know, us getting home at midnight, was certainly beneficial. Mark, I'll go to bad things. To my point, as I just said, this team is still not creating enough from the run of play from an underlying number standpoint. And I still, you know, we're six games in, the press is still not extremely effective. I've seen, you know, Joe Lowry, Matt Doyle, Wanners have all shared metrics about how this team is not pressing as much as maybe as much as other MLS teams, which speaks to maybe Chris Armas doesn't want to press as much. And that's kind of a question given his background of, you know, all the various Red Bulls connections he had in his previous jobs. And regardless of when they are pressing, there's no question at this point in my mind, Rabbi, that the press is doing a very good job of when the opponent has the ball and they're playing it with their D-mids, with their goalkeeper, with their back line, that they are not comfortable in possession when the Rapids are pressing them. The Rapids are doing a good job of preventing the opponent from playing out of the back to then get into the final third with their default setup and have their phases of play and create chances. It is disorganizing the opponent in terms of what they are trying to do with the ball. I don't think there's any question about that. The issue is, and it's more organized now as well, so it's clearly that they're moving in unison, so there does not seem to be a situational misunderstanding in terms of one player seeing one thing and thinking that we're doing one thing. They are moving in unison for the most part. The issue and the underlying concern that I have, that's still not leading to turnovers that lead to then high quality opportunities, which then speaks to what they're doing both when they create a turnover and go in transition and when they try to attack in possession. Of this is still a team that I think is lacking in confidence and execution on the ball in the final third. They look flustered. There's not a lot of confidence and they're not executing. It seems like Omer Fernandez is looking to pass it to somebody else to try and take the shot. Rafael Navajo, I think he's focused. He does not look confident in that. Mm-hmm. I have the opportunity. Here's the big opportunity. Let me shoot and let me score that. The mm-hmm. only players right now who are doing that are Cole Bassett, which it's not happening as much because mm-hmm. he's playing further back in the field, so there's fewer of those opportunities. It's still a net positive for the team. And at this point now, we can say Georgi Mihailovic doing that as well. I forgot to mention as well, Mark, I thought this was Ali LaRaz's best performance with the Colorado Rapids in his entire career. I thought he was really good in possession, and there were moments where he had an opportunity to go and try and make something happen. And while he didn't make that happen, it's because he got fouled, and those led to good opportunities on set pieces for the Rapids. So where I'm confident in what he does between the boxes. I'm increasingly feeling better about what he's doing from a defensive work rate and a physicality standpoint there. Where my concern has been what we saw with Rapids 2 last year, which something we had not seen, I think, prior to the last, we'll say 120 minutes that he's played for the first team, was him doing stuff in the final third. And he was cooking in the final third, but it was doing stuff on the ball that then flusters LAFC, that then forces LAFC to foul him rather than him creating to then create chances. This is still a team that from the run of play in possession is not creating enough. And we already have the data of what we know about what this team struggles with when it comes to actually finishing their opportunities. Last two things that I'll say on bad things, Mark, Kevin Cabral is at fault on the first goal for me, but otherwise I thought he was fine. Defensive work rate, really good. What he tried to do into space as well, I think decently. By his performance standards, it was really good. He did not look out of place from the rest of the attackers that were on the field. Now he's still lumped in with Rafael Navajo and with Omer Fernandez, where he can do good stuff on the ball. He works really hard. He's clearly trying. He's clearly trying to help the team. He gets to the final third, and he's functionally useless. He's not doing anything at this point. And I can say that about everybody. I can say that about most other attackers on this team, unfortunately, right now. Andreas Maxu, Mark, or Mask Su, as DNVR has been calling him. Shaking his head. I thought we spoke to him post-game. His face still looks really bad. He's still going to have to wear the mask. He supposedly got some work done today on that, Mark. I don't know if that's surgery. I don't know if that's something corrective or anything. He looks uncomfortable with the mask, both in games, now that we've seen him with that, and then in training as well. And there seems to be some visibility issues, particularly where he has to go up and try and head the ball. Anything that involves, the face moving or whatever, it moves the mask. And then there's a moment of discomfort and maybe disorientation.
That's a great observation. And watching the game, the commentators didn't quite seem to understand that. But there were at least two plays that I watched where I saw the ball come off of Maxo's head. And I went, that didn't look like the way he wanted to play it. Like, he didn't square that up the right way. And I think that is like one of your more incisive, brilliant comments of the last couple pods, Matt, where you kind of like, you pick out a really small thing that I had thought, but I hadn't really thought about in like a bigger context. So well said, Matt.
Yeah. So now that's not necessarily a criticism of him, Mark, but I think
he's got a mask. What is he gonna do, dude?
Rapids community, we need to prepare ourselves for Andreas Maxu not being a slightly lesser version of himself than recently, as he works with that, and hopefully his nose gets
straightens out.
So hopefully his nose gets better. The swelling's gone, Mark, from like an eye standpoint. There was still some discoloration as well, so hopefully it gets better. But he had that He had that header opportunity, Mark. I think it was right after the first goal for LAFC, where he's got separation. It's right on the spot where he'd want it, and the ball goes straight to Hugo Lloris, the LAFC goalkeeper. We're 30 minutes into this podcast, Mark. We still haven't brought up the fact that the Rapids beat LAFC when they only had World Cup champion Hugo Lloris in goal. They scored 3 goals on Hugo Lloris, 2 of them set pieces. Oh my God, LAFC's wall couldn't stand up against Georgi Mihailovic. So, you know, I have to...
Amazing.
I asked the question, Mark, of whether or not if Andreas Maxu's fully healthy and doesn't have that mask on, does he get more on that header? And is he more of a threat there? And is that going to be an issue with set pieces? But set pieces, fantastic, Mark. Happy to see both of those. And Moise Bombito, fantastic performance.
This is a bad thing, Matt. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going back and forth. Okay. Moise Bombito, happy birthday. He scored on his birthday. His mom was there. And he's, as Chris Armas put it, Mark, Chris Armas had a really good quote post game about how Moise is becoming a master of the basics. And so if you combine with what he's doing with the first team, how he's elevated himself, given what's going on with Andreas Maxu at the moment. And if that leads to him getting any minutes at Copa America, Mark, we've got a really special center back, and Rapids fans should cherish him while he is here, because I don't know that he's going to be on the Rapids in 2 years, but. Mark, your bad thing, let's move on.
My bad things are really small and really simple, because I think you really did a great job of pointing out, like, the bigger picture is, like, the Rapids are overachieving or achieving at a level that we have not expected, to the degree that they are capitalizing and playing very well against very good teams in MLS. The first 18 minutes, they looked really, really kind of careful and ponderous. I keep using that word. That's the last time I will use it, I promise. But they, you know, in the first 18 minutes, the Rapids had 66% of possession, but LAFC had 7 shots and Colorado had 0. That might have been by design. That might have been like a will absorb pressure and just kind of like kill off the game for a little while and see how it goes. I didn't think that was a real great move, especially after you get scored on by your opponent at home 8 minutes into the game. Not necessarily the way to go. They made the adjustments, so that was good. But I do think coming out slow is something that we need to worry about a little bit. They weren't trapping and pressing in the beginning. I think that was also a tactical decision, one that I think was out of caution, and maybe the Rapids were too cautious. And I think that may be a thing that Chris Armas will be reflecting on with his staff this week, which was, we don't need to respect teams. One of the things I was thinking, by the way, and I noticed it in LAFC by the end of the first half and again by the end of the second, which was, if the Rapids press a lot early, they will become tired. And if they become tired, they lose their altitude advantage that they have over opponents. So the idea might have been, let's not press LAFC, let's play them straight up. And in minute 40, we'll have the advantage. And in minute 85, we'll have the advantage. Theory, but I can't prove it. All right, my actual bad things were these. One, Cabral getting roasted against Atuesta was not a great look for him. And I'm sure the coaches will be like, yo, I know that offense is really your thing and you're not a defender, but let's work on your defense this week. Because he kind of flinched, stepped back, gave too much space to Atuesta. It wasn't a great look. Two, was Cole Bassett missing a really nice opportunity in the 63rd minute by wandoing it over the bar. He headed into the ground and then it bounced right up and over the goal. He needs to do better there. That's nothing huge, but, kind of like a thing that we should kind of note. There was another play at 65 where Darren Yappe had a really nice opportunity in front of the goal and he flubbed it. It was kind of a bummer. So some of our players who we've been waiting for them to show up and do the thing, or they have a recurring problem in front of goal, are continuing to have a recurring problem. My final bad thing, which I have seen before, but it's been a while since I saw this, was... David Martinez steps into the game. He goes mano a mano against Sam Vines and just turns him inside out. I mean, Sam kind of dropped and twisted the wrong way. Martinez picked the inside line and then bent it into the goal because he had kind of juked Sam out of his socks. That can't happen. Sam's supposed to be one of our best players. He's got to do better there. So we've got individual players who had great games here and individual players who kind of disappointed. There is a universe where the Rapids lose this game 2-1 or lose this game 3-2 in the other direction. And I think that these little things that I'm harping on are the differences between the Colorado Rapids being a legit fifth place, fourth place team in the league, and the Colorado Rapids slumping later in the season to the positions that you and I, Matt, think they probably will end up in, which is like the 7-8-9 slot in the Western Conference. But I see a world where these Rapids are actually a very good soccer team, and they shock the world and really kind of do a great job all season. It's just these bad things have got to be minimized. They've got to be addressed. These players have got to step up and not let it down and be the best versions of themselves this season to get themselves into the playoffs.
There are soccer games, Mark, like Houston, which have absolutely no plot. There are games that are about the greater narrative and what's somebody doing from a tactically standpoint and where's this personnel shift and what does that substitution mean and what questions is one team regularly asking of the other when they get into the final third. And then there are games that are just back and forth that aren't about the whole of the 90 minutes or any 5 to 10 minute stretch, but rather are about just, you know, 5 to 10 moments that are a few seconds long. And this was certainly one of those games that was about the moments. And if the Rapids won those 10 moments, you know, 7-3 or 6-4, they were going to find a way to win the game as well. So to your point, I think there's still part of us still see there's still a canary in the coal mine about this result and about this team and the way the team is constructed and the way the team is being coached. But so to pivot this to my big thing, you know, I think that this has to, the win, no matter what, the fact that they got the win and the way that they did has to breed confidence. Certainly for Kamani Stewart-Baines, certainly for Ali Larraz, definitely for, I know for a fact, Georgi Mihailovic as well. And then, so even if they are currently faking it, Mark, can this be part of them faking it until they make it, whether it's guys getting on form, Darren Yapi finally scoring a goal in MLS, or Chris Armas's system finally coming good as he continues to iterate on or deal with this? And last thing that I'll say, Mark, I don't know that this is why the Rapids win. So to both of our points about how we're not 100% certain that the red card guaranteed that the Rapids were going to win this game, that red card was technically a second yellow, and it was for the gamesmanship, Mark, of playing the ball away, which is the new MLS gamesmanship and time-wasting rule, which was a rule implementation that the league and the governing bodies had passed before the start of the season. And the implementation was on hold because of the referee lockout protest strike and everything. And so with Scabby, the ref, being gone, with pro referees formally coming back, and Villarreal being back in the center circle for games, finally we had that rule implemented, Mark. So that was technically, that was a play that led to a yellow card that was a sending off that, had this game happened last week, would not have been put in place as well. Georgi Mihailovic had a similar moment, Mark, where I thought he could have gotten a dumb yellow card as well. But so last big thing, glad that that Scabby the ref is gone. Eventually, Mark, we're going to have to deal with Ted Uncle.
I am so glad. I mean, Armando Villarreal is probably my second favorite referee in all of MLS, next to Ismael Elfaf.
Yes.
So I was so happy that we got him this week.
Yeah. So those are kind of my big things as well, Mark. I think we've said our piece. Anything else you want to say, or shall we move on?
Big thing is this team is in seventh place in the Western Conference, and I don't think that'll necessarily last. The season is going to have ups and downs. I'm not saying I predict where we'll be at the end right now. I've already made that prediction, but I definitely feel like, you know, you and I both spoke about in past weeks that the Colorado Rapids are, the first seven games of the season are against tough opponents, and they have some fairly difficult road games. And we just kind of need to endure this stretch and get to the next stretch of the season before we can make any kind of pronouncements. I feel like we've pretty much accomplished everything we need to. Next game doesn't necessarily mean anything. It is the cherry on top if we get a result out of it. But these Colorado Rapids have done so well enough in the first six games that I feel like they've weathered the storm and they're ready to kind of grow into the next phase of the season with aplomb.
Rapids fans, I know on some level holding the high line is your group therapy. I want to give you permission. The Rapids won a game. You are allowed to be happy. We can stave off the moment of dread and the sense of doom we have until at the very least, like 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Saturday. With that, listeners, Mark, tell them how they can best support holding the high line.
Ladies, gentlemen, and friends of the podcast, we would love to have you join our Highliners Club. That is the folks who pay a little bit of money so that Matt and I can drive out to the soccer games and pay for all that expensive ink and paper with all of our voluminous writing, the carrier pigeons that we dispatch to send out the podcast, and so on and so forth. But seriously, folks, we really appreciate any support that you can give to the podcast. Just a little tip in our jar to say thanks for doing the work that we do. For me, that's the Substack that I write, and of course the time we spend prepping and preparing for this pod. For Matt, it's the editing work that he does such a fantastic job of. We will reward you by, if you are a monthly or yearly subscription holder for Holding the High Line at the paid level, we will send you some merch. We've got a t-shirt with the Holding the High Line logo in black or in camo gray. They're great workout shirts. I went for a 4.2 mile run this afternoon in my Holding the High Line shirt. Last week, I wore my Michael Azira Foundation t-shirt from the donations that we as a podcast and you as the listeners help make to the founding father, the in Mike We Trust, the patron saint of the podcast, former Colorado Rapids defensive midfielder extraordinaire Michael Azira, who's still a friend of the pod and who we're going to give a shout out to this week. But anyhow, if you'd like to subscribe, we will send you some merch. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us to do the work of citizen soccer journalism, and we are grateful to you. Back to you, Matt.
Mark, we won't talk a whole lot about this game because listeners, you're probably hearing us on Tuesday, and so it's going to be tomorrow at time that you're listening. But so, Mark, this coming Wednesday, April 3rd, the Colorado Rapids 2 will be playing in the second round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, and they will be playing USL League One side Northern Colorado Hailstorm. Amon Zayed is still their head coach and still doing a fantastic job. Listeners, Irving Parra is back. You might remember him. He had testicular cancer towards the start of last season and then basically trained through a little bit and was around the team for chemotherapy. Mark, you were showing me. Oh, what's up, Iggy? Oh, Iggy ran away. Iggy didn't want to talk to me. Okay. So, Mark, Hailstorm have a lot of turnover from their previous roster. Arthur Rogers is now with FC Tulsa, and then their goal scorer from last year, Trevor Amon, Colorado School of Mines and Westminster, Colorado native off the top of my head, is now with Sacramento Republic. So they've got a bit of turnover, Mark. I won't go through the names in the background of the players they've added, but their technical staff believes that they are better than they have been previously. They've been road warriors to start the season. Their new stadium is still being touched up on before they officially open it up, hopefully this time next month as well. Mark, this is a veteran group. This is a team that is very experienced in USL. This is a team that has a history of playing in Open Cup and getting results against Switchbacks, getting results against RSL, and they put in a pretty good fight, Mark, for that first half when they played Rapids 1 this time last year. And so you can track that. You compare that, Mark, to where Rapids 2 are at. They kind of had a disappointing performance on the weekend against LAFC 2. They lost in penalties, but played them tough throughout the 90 minutes. And I should say, Mark, based on my understanding of the Open Cup roster rules in terms of eligibility for first team players, the following first team players are potentially available for selection for Rapids 2 on Wednesday: Jackson Travis, Kamani Stewart-Bain, Sebastian Anderson, Adam Beaudry, Mike Edwards, Wayne Frederick II, and Nate Jones. Darren Yapi has played too many minutes per game in order to be eligible for that. But so, Mark, I'm going into this game, Rabbi, and I'm thinking firmly that it's going to be a close game. But if I had to pick a favorite right now, I'm taking the grown-a men that are Northern Colorado Hailstorm. I think they want this. I think Irvin Parra is coming out ready to ball. And I think Amon Zayed's looking at this as a revenge opportunity. They see that this is them going up against the Rapids organization. And so the frustrations they had with how they played and how they lost 3-1 last year is going to be carried over, even though they're technically playing the reserve team on Wednesday.
I'm going to go with the Cobras on this one, Matt. I think that the Colorado Rapids 2 team have been very talented. There was a thing I was going to say in the last segment that I forgot to say, which was, and I just wanted to say this because it's semi-related to Colorado Rapids 2, which was Ollie LaRoz was phenomenal for Rapids 2 last year, and Robin Fraser didn't give him a chance. And at the end of the season, when things were really bad and we didn't really know what the point was of the rest of the season, we kind of thought, like, Fraser, just play LaRoz. Who cares? What's the big deal? And he didn't. And Armas has played LaRoz, and it's been great. He's been great. And I think, and I'm going to throw a little shade here, and I don't like to because I generally liked Robin Fraser, but I think Armas has proven that Fraser made some mistakes last year.
I agree.
Yeah, and so I thought that was a really interesting kind of thing. It was like, LaRoz was probably ready to play with Rapids 1 last year and didn't. The reason I bring this up in this segment, other than the fact that I forgot to say it in the last segment, is that, you know, this Rapids 2 team is really talented. It's full of really good guys. I think Sebastian Anderson is probably on the cusp of really being able to start. He's just blocked by the fact that he plays the same position as the Rapids captain, who's the most experienced player and the absolute metronome of the squad, which is Keegan Rosenberry. And so, but having a player that talented, who's really MLS level, kind of anchoring the back line for your team. You got Mike Edwards, who is probably also on that kind of in between level. You've got a couple other players who really could, kind of step up, like Nate Jones, who are experienced players, talented players, physical players. I'm going to give this one to the Cobras. I really do think that there's enough talent on this team and a little bit of poise. Marlon Vargas has been doing really great things for Rapids 2 up till now. Foot Mob has him as the highest rated player. He has a number of goals and assists. I feel like there might be, and I'm not a huge fan of the Rapids not playing in the Open Cup. I'm not thrilled with it. But if Rapids 2 make a deep run, you know, it might be kind of a fun thing. I might kind of enjoy it, especially if they wind up getting to come out to this part of the country for a game. That being said, there will be no Open Cup here in the immediate rounds because the lowest level team, Steel City, got knocked out by Michigan Stars, and Michigan Stars are off to Minnesota to play Minnesota United 2. So that's what's happening on the other end of the world. El Farolito, the best soccer team based on a burrito shop in all of San Francisco, are in this round of the Open Cup. There's a bunch more fun. We are still, of course, in the preliminary rounds. USL teams don't enter till the next round, so I'm looking over my looking out at the distance to see, you know, what happens there, and pretty excited about it. But I'm giving this one to the Cobras.
Give me a score line, Rabbi.
Let's say 2-1. I feel like this one is going to be tense and tight. Tournament soccer is very different than regular season soccer. Teams play buttoned up and more careful. The other thing that, you know, because we both are Open Cup sickos, going back, is it's really for the more experienced, more professional teams like Rapids 2. It's really about outlasting your opponent, playing well after minute 40 and after minute 80. And you can really put the opponent to the sword because these guys bag groceries for a living. They're carpenters, they're electricians, you know, they're desk jockeys, right? They don't have the, you know, 90 minute fitness because they don't work out as many hours because they have day jobs, right? And that's, I think, the challenge that Hailstorm are going to face.
So I'll take Hailstorm 2-1, and I will say this will be in extra time, Mark, and it'll be 1-1 at the end of the 90 minutes. I'll say I've really liked what I've seen from Diaz from the R2 games that I've looked at, the Puerto Rican kid that they have. So I think Diaz gets a goal for Rapids 2. And then I will say Ethan Horde, who was an absolute monster in one of the preseason friendlies that I went to, Mark. He's from Wasting, Wisconsin. I can't remember what random small little school that he was at, but Las Vegas Lights were looking at him. They tried to tried to give him a trial, but then he ended up signing with Hailstorm. So I think he scores, and I think Irving Parra scores as well. I'll say
it'll
be
I don't think the Lights exist anymore, right, Matt?
Did they fold, or are they rebranded? I can't remember.
No, maybe you're right. Maybe they didn't fold. Maybe I'm thinking of Reno.
It's Reno, yeah. So I'll say it'll be a goal and an assist from Irvin Parra to win it for Hailstorm in this one. Last thing that I'll say on this, Mark. So the way that the seeding works in terms of when teams come in, there's some USL teams that are getting a bye because of the numbers, and so Switchbacks are one of those teams, listeners. So the next two closest USL championship teams that would be into the next round for the winner of Hailstorm versus Rapids 2 are New Mexico United and El Paso. I kind of think, Mark, they're close enough to each other to where they might get each other. I know there's that non-league team from Lubbock, I think, that made it into the next round. We'll see if they win it. And then the next closest team geographically, Mark, would be the winner of Sasha Kleschen's Des Moines Menace versus Union Omaha. And so I'm not sure how the geographic pots are going to end up working, because if it's Des Moines, they're probably closer to Chicago Fire would be coming in, St. Louis City, Sporting Kansas City. There's other USL teams in the Midwest as well. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. But I would have to think, Mark, then, if whoever wins this game wins that next round, whether it's Union Omaha, whether it's Sasha Kleschen coming to Dick's Sporting Goods Park, whether it's one of those teams having to go down to Albuquerque or Santa Fe to play New Mexico United, is that then they would definitely be in the geographic pot with RSL and with Switchbacks. Both of those teams would be in the next round, and this would be RSL's first team, not Real Monarch. So there is still... Wait, I am trying to speak into existence here, Mark, the possibility for another Colorado Clasico, just like how we had with Azteca and with Rapids 2, that Switchbacks get that, and the winner of that gets to go play at RSL and then give RSL a bloody nose in the cup, give the first team a bloody nose in the cup. Mark, let's move on. This coming Saturday, April 6th, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on Inter Miami for the first time ever. Inter Miami has been in existence for 5 years, folks, and finally the Colorado Rapids are playing them. Miami are currently second in the Eastern Conference. They have 11 points off of 7 games played. They have played one more game than most MLS teams, and they've got a record of 3-2-2. And as Rabbi mentioned, the Colorado Rapids currently seventh in the West, 8 points off of 6 games played, with an even record, 2-2-2, and even a goal difference of -2. That being said, Mark, the version of Inter Miami that the Rapids are getting on Saturday could be not what we're used to or what we've seen on paper. They had 10 guys, Mark, who were listed as unavailable or questionable for their game over the weekend against NYCFC. I should say they took in a couple shellackings on the road, Mark. They got absolutely blown out by Red Bulls against New York a couple weeks ago, but they've been pretty decent at home. Their injured players are Facundo Farias, Ian Frey, Nicolas Ferreira, Sergei Hitstoff, Lionel Messi. I don't know if you've heard of him, Mark. Federico Redondo, Robbie Robinson, Tomas Avila, and Benjamin Kermanski. And it should be said, listeners, that Inter Miami also have Champions Cup this week. They are playing their first leg at home in Miami against Monterrey, and then they're playing them next week as well. So this is a Rapids sandwich, Mark. This is a Rapids burrito, a Rapids taco that Inter Miami is going to have to deal with between the proverbial tortilla that is a first and second leg against Monterrey. Mark, I have to think that Tata Martino is looking not beyond the Rapids, but like if there's one game that he's going to punt on this one, we know that we're going to think that they have to think that they can go in there. Suarez plays 60 minutes. Busquets maybe plays a half or something. Maybe Jordi Alba comes off the bench. Maybe they ride some of the younger guys. You know, Julian Gressel is fit enough to where I think that he could go 90-90-60 between those three games. We'll see what that looks like. We'll get a really good sense, Mark, of where Inter Miami is at fitness and health-wise based on who plays on the Wednesday or the Thursday. against Monterrey. I have to imagine, Mark, that if Messi is starting in that game, he's probably at best on the bench for 10 minutes if he's absolutely needed against Inter Miami, against the Rapids on Saturday. I think we're probably getting a B team, Mark. I think we're probably not getting Lionel Messi. I don't care. I'm going to the game anyways. I have to think that I'm going to see Busquets at some point. I'm going to physically be able to look at Busquets and be able to look at Luis Suarez. That's enough
for
me.
Did you get a press pass, Matt, or did you buy a ticket?
I will be in the press box, baby.
Wow.
Yes. So I'm going to have to brush up on my Espanol, which I use regularly in undergrad, in order to ask Luis Suarez about what Tata Martino is doing técnicamente y tácticamente for Inter Miami. So, wow. So I think the
Rapids, you get to be in the post game with Luis Suarez. I mean, that's pretty epic. That's going to be an amazing thing. My closest experience was being at LAFC in the post game with Bob Bradley and with some of their, like, and Carlos Vela. I mean, like, that was like an unbelievable, like, just sitting there and be like, I am this close to Carlos Vela is a pretty big deal, you know. Yeah. So we love, I think reporters would love to pretend like we're not enamored by the big stars, but like,
we are.
Let's 100%. Be honest, we're pretty enamored by these. Like, my favorite old story that I haven't told in a really long time was when the Rapids played in CCL and we drew Toronto at that really cold game, and they made a mix zone instead of actually having, like, you know, what the Rapids normally do, which is a press conference in the tiny press conference room. And I interviewed a player, and then I turned to my left to leave, and I was standing, no joke, 12 inches away from Michael Bradley. I'm like, oh my God, I'm this close to Michael Bradley, you know. And it's like, it's an amazing experience. Anyways, all right, back to you, Matt.
So Mark, it's a valid question, what version of Inter Miami the Colorado Rapids are getting on Saturday. And it's hard for me to believe that, you know, they have 8 guys who were out for Saturday against NYCFC, 2 of them who were questionable, that they get fully healthy to where we then see a fully armed and operational Inter Miami, or a fully operational Inter Miami.
Was that a Death Star reference? That was phenomenal.
Yes, they're a big pink Death Star, Mark. And if you told me that Lionel Messi is 90 minutes fit for Saturday, I'd be predicting a 3 or a 4-0 thumping right now. But I have to think that if they do get healthy, they're going to put all their chips into CCC on the midweek. I'm going to say, I'm going to hedge my bets here, Mark, because we've got some unknowns, and I'm going to say 1-1 draw. But if the Rapids are functionally getting a reserve team against Inter Miami, if NYCFC can go there and, you know, sleepwalk their way through a 1-1 draw, Mark, if Georgi Mihailovic comes out and is as confident as we think he can be after that brace that he scored, the Rapids might actually be able to win this one.
Oh my God, I love it. I think the idea, the simple idea of the humble little Colorado Rapids going in and kicking the snot out of highly vaunted and impressive Inter Miami is amazing. I am sadly in your camp, which is I don't see a world where we get to play Lionel Messi, which I think is something we've been talking about for no joke, like 12 months. I think when Inter Miami signed Leo Messi, we were both skeptical that they would ever give the Rapids a game against Messi. And then we were skeptical. We were pretty sure that, like, somehow it was going to work out that they didn't, he didn't get to play that game. And it's looking like that. I just want to make a few notes. One, Drake Callender has looked a little bit more human and a little bit less impenetrable this season than last. I've gotten to watch more Inter Miami games. Inter Miami is basically my go-to other game that I watch, so I watch them obviously a lot because they're kind of appointment viewing in MLS. I've bought the hype, but I also enjoy watching beautiful soccer, and they play beautiful soccer. Interesting note: Sergei Busquets, who was kind of starting as the deep lying midfielder regista in the 4-3-3, moved back to center back last game, which is an interesting choice. It's basically, realistically, he's kind of playing like a floating D-mid regista, and somebody else covers for him. Go ahead, Matt.
Atanacho.
And Catenaccio, very
Catenaccio. The Italian, yeah. the chain component, or it's like how the sweeper was the guy behind the center backs as well.
I was gonna say the sweeper, but he's kind of he's the sweeper in front of the line more than the sweeper behind the line. But the sweeper sometimes has operated in both those contexts. But anyways, David Ruiz, I watched him play last week and I found him to be kind of impressive. Julian Gressel is always a problem to deal with, and the Rapids are going to have to close him down. Considering he attacks on the right side, that's going to be Sam Vines' job, so that's going to be interesting. Luis Suarez is an absolute handful. He has been a beast. Those kind of plays that we've talked about and mentioned this podcast and in previous seasons, where our striker absolutely has to finish that, whoever our striker was that we were talking about in that context, Suarez finishes those. He always finishes those. You put him in front of goal and you give him a ball and it goes in the back of the net and there's no way around it. He's absolutely deadly in front of the net. And so the Rapids are going to have to deal with that. I mean, I imagine that a kid like Moise Bombito is probably going to play him pretty well and also have the same level of Michael Bradley, oh my God, that I had. Which is, at some point, he's going to be bodying up Luis Suarez and say to myself, I can't believe I'm bodying up Luis Suarez, who I watched in the 2010 World Cup, you know? And I mean, Suarez, I think, played all the way back in the 2006 World Cup, unless I'm crazy.
But, and yeah, he was, I think he was with Uruguay in 2010.
That might have been the one where he got in trouble.
That is the one where he got in trouble.
Yes, we're not going to talk about that because we don't want to be that podcast. But anyways, this is a very good team. The other player who, if you haven't been watching, when he gets service from Messi or Busquets or Alba, he's absolutely filthy, is Robert Taylor.
Yes.
Taylor was devastating last year. I mean, he was like on fire in certain games, especially in Leagues Cup, and it was crazy to watch. The interesting thing about Miami is they haven't come out impressive. NYCFC haven't been a very good team, and NYCFC slowed them down and dealt with them last week for a 1-1 draw. And if you watch, I don't know if you watched the Red Bull match that Miami had, but I watched about like 30 minutes of it. I turned it off because Red Bull were murdering them, absolutely putting them to the sword, and it was embarrassing at some point. And they weren't doing it with the press. They were doing it the new way that Red Bull play, which is a mid block that forces a turnover and just shoves it down your throat in a very aggressive way. That would be a great way for the Rapids to play. I'm not as optimistic as you. I don't think the Rapids get out of this one as well. I think there's been enough sputtering with Miami the last couple weeks that they're going to want to come in and show something. And I do think there's a non-zero chance that, especially considering how their struggles have gone and that they've fallen to third in the Eastern Conference, I believe, that Miami will, if Leo's ready to play off the bench, use him for 60 against Monterrey and then use him for maybe 20 or 30 against the Rapids. And that's really all Rapids fans want to see, which is to be able to say, oh my God, my Colorado Rapids are on the same field as Leo Messi. So. Should be fun.
Yeah, they're second in the West, Mark, but they have played one more game than Columbus and New York, so they're level on points, but one more game played in that regard. So, I agree with you, Mark, that there's absolutely a scenario where the Rapids huff and puff and do a whole lot of work against a team that's just way more talented than them and way better on the ball than them, and they're not able to get a result. There's absolutely a way in which, you know, Inter Miami old man limps through this game and Luis Suarez gets two opportunities and buries both of them spectacularly, and they're on the rundown for MLS 360 and for the wrap-up show, and Inter Miami wins the game 2-0. At the same time, to your point, New York Red Bulls clearly showed a blueprint for if you are playing a banged up Inter Miami and they rotate the squad and Suarez is on the bench and Messi and Busquets aren't even in the team, a path forward where you can go forward and absolutely break them down. So there's, to your point, I'm I'm picking a 1-1 draw because I'm picking the middle of where the error bars of the realms of possibilities are. There's a chance that Monterrey absolutely beats them up. They get a bunch of injuries. Tata Martino functionally rolls out Inter Miami 2, and the Rapids can absolutely walk over them. And there's a path forward to where the Rapids are able to outplay Inter Miami because of their circumstances and still not win. And there's still a chance, Mark, that somehow Lionel Messi is able to play, in which case the Rapids could lose this game 7-0, and I wouldn't be completely surprised. So I don't know what's going to happen. And I think HDHL, we both reserve the right to change our prediction up until we, once we see the starting lineup and we see what version of Inter Miami the Rapids are getting, because there's so much variability in terms of what that could look like. Anything else, Rabbi, or shall we get out of here?
I think we've said basically almost everything that needs to be said about soccer today, but we've had a good pod. We've designated them the big pink Death Star, and I think that that's about the most brilliant thing that I've ever heard anybody say. So well done.
Listeners, follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSmetPollard, and at @Rapids96podcast. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe, however you get your podcast. Tell other soccer and Rapids curious people about us.
Like the Facebook. We need all the Facebook likes we can get.
And of course, just like Ian, if you want to send us an Ask HDHL, and it takes more than 280 or however many characters we're getting on X at this point, you can email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to Holding the High Line. Enjoy your week, Rapids fans. The Colorado Rapids have beaten LAFC, and who knows, maybe this time next week we'll be talking about a win against Lionel Messi.
Peace.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.